Hello and welcome to Connections. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore on this Thursday. Our show today features Lori Ehrlich, state representative from Marblehead, Swampscott, two precincts in Lynn. Representative Ehrlich will be joining us on the line in just a few moments. Also, we'll hear from Jeff Hall from the Massachusetts Red Cross and what they're up to and some of the things happening with the Red Cross. They do have a location donation center in Danvers, but we'll hear from Jeff Hall just ahead. Rick, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Bill. As you say, very exciting. Talking to Karen Carroll, she is the Gloucester Public Health Director. She's been kind enough to let us check in with her every week. She'll give us an update on what's going on in Gloucester and on Cape Ann, and she will reinforce certain things that we already know, plus give you a little bit of information that maybe you didn't know. And then down below, we have an interview with Dustin Luca, the reporter for the Salem News, that is very interesting. He fleshes out some of the stories that he's been covering and how he covers some of the stories that he's been covering.
Well, you got it. He covers Salem, so the Salem News. He's an essential reporter for the Salem News for sure. A couple of things. We've got a lot of great guests coming up. We'll tell you about them later on our show coming up this week, our Friday show. But again, just reminding everybody, Connections now weekdays at 10, every day at 10 o'clock. And there's a great way to let us know what's going on. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, or call our 24/7 record line or voicemail, which is 978-325-3638, 978-325-3638. We do have that very much available to you if you go onto the tab at the top of our webpage, the Contact Us tab. That's probably appropriately named because that allows you to get in contact with us and, of course, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Richard.
Yeah, you're right, Bill. And I'd love to hear from people if they have comments, not so much the complaints, but suggestions. That would be cool. And again, a lot of great stuff coming up. Should also point out, check out the rest of MSO News Sports, too, because we've got a lot of other information, a lot of great videos. And we are doing our very special feature on the class of 2020 that I think will be most enjoyable.
Yeah, we're doing those with athletic directors and athletes, and we're also going to be expanding that and going beyond just the athletes and talking with principals and some of the key students in their schools, the class of 2020, that will not be able to have some of the pomp and circumstance that might normally accompany a high school senior at this time of the year and the weeks ahead. You know, Rick, if you were talking about complaints, if they want to complain about you, they can go ahead and email us. That would be all right.
Yeah, let's give them Tim Kearns' address.
Yeah, or Tim Kearns, if they want to complain about Tim Kearns. In fact, let's just leave it at that. If you have complaints about Tim Kearns, you can use that email, use the phone number, whatever, and leave us a complaint about that.
No, we can take it, and the thing is, we wouldn't. You know, critique is good. Good. If it's a thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs sideways, I'd like to hear from people.
Otherwise, we won't hear from anybody unless they're complaining, right? That's probably right, yeah.
That's been my history anyway.
State Representative Lori Ehrlich is with us. And Representative, welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
Yeah, no, thank you, Bill. Thanks for inviting me. Coming to you from my home office. So I'm thrilled to connect with you and hope that everybody out there is getting through this okay.
Representative, I know I've talked to several other state reps, and they find themselves incredibly busy during this time, even though they're not going into the state houses. Is that the case with you?
Absolutely. I have never been this busy as a state rep, and it's just a different kind of busy. You know, when we're in the state house, it's in-person busy. People stop in. People, want to talk about bills, and it's a constant stream of visitors. Without that, my workday has shifted from a focus on bills to a focus on helping people. The needs are so great right now, and everything from unemployment to hunger. There's a lot of food insecurity and people who suddenly don't have an income. So it's really, really now about, helping people get through this uncertain and frightening time. But I'm working around the clock. My phone rings all day long, all night. And it's, my staff is working remotely as well. And we are doing our best to help everyone. And, you know, in Massachusetts, I've come to really appreciate how much we care in Massachusetts and how efficiently we run. We've been thrown some curveballs by the federal government, and we have at every curve really made sure that we have the backs of our citizens and we make sure that people are taken care of. So really proud and frankly relieved to be living in Massachusetts, because this hasn't been the case in every other state. So we're here for people. This is when leadership matters. And this is when we really can step up and help people. So it's sad that we, you know, there's so much need, but it's also at the same time, you know, it's very satisfying to be able to actually help people at their time of need.
You know, as you mentioned earlier, you mentioned jobs, unemployment, hunger, all of those things. And then you also mentioned the response. And you're right. I am struck by the incredible response from local officials, from organizations that are stepping up and had to make some major changes in the way they deliver services and the amount of services that they deliver. All of that, as well as the coordination at the, you know, between the state and local officials. It's been amazing.
Yeah, and it's really, I've come to appreciate the kindness of people and people who are saying, you know, I'm okay, my family's okay, how can I help? And I'm also appreciating how many people really do live on the edge of being able to feed their families. I've been working really hard to coordinate some additional capacity for food pantries and meal delivery services. Organizations like North Shore Elder Services and even an organization called Root and another one called Spur in our town that is suddenly finding their normal demand for food is growing exponentially, and people are stepping up to try to help, even coordinating these organizations with each other has actually been fruitful. People are stepping up and saying, you know, this person can't get out of their house to get to a food pantry. How can we make sure that they get a warm meal? People are doing it individually as well, helping out a neighbor, picking up groceries for somebody who's housebound, or delivering a hot meal. Whoever thought just even 2 months ago that this would be what we were doing right now, but as tough as this time is, and we are starting to see deaths in my local communities, a lot of them, I think we have been taking it seriously, and people are stepping up to help their neighbor. So, it's tough to see a silver lining right now, but, it is heartening to see people helping out people in their community.
I want to just ask maybe the last couple of questions, Laurie, would be about what's happening at the State House. I know there are informal sessions, and there is so much work that really is on the horizon, but yet can't be done, such as budgets and planning and all of that, that would normally be wrapping up around this time, or at least peaking, if you will. But what is happening at the State House?
Yeah, I mean, usually by the end of April, we have already had our budget deliberations, and that is not possible right now. There's not only, can we not meet, but there's so much uncertainty now around what the budget will look like. So we have put that off to a date uncertain at this point. Right now we're passing emergency measures from everything, to make sure that agencies have the resources they need. We're passing a lot of coronavirus-related bills, entirely in informal session. We met yesterday virtually to establish rules for ourselves to be able to pass emergency measures that will keep the state running virtually. So we had a very long discussion yesterday to make sure that we understood how this was going to work, because we've never done this before. We've always, you know, since the legislature has been meeting for hundreds of years, we've always met in person, and that's how it's always been. It's just not safe to do that and bring our staff in right now, and you know, for us or anybody in the building to meet in person, and we're in an emergency situation. So we had to establish new rules. They're being established right now, so we can do this, you know, by phone, and that's underway right now. So we are having our first formal session tomorrow to take up emergency measures, and part of the reason we're doing that is because the federal government actually extended the tax filing deadline, out several months, and took us quite by surprise. The state did end up matching the federal deadline, so people don't have to do their taxes by April 15th, as people know. They still can, and I highly recommend they do, especially if they're collecting unemployment. That could be helpful. But we did, after much discussion and debate, decide to match the federal deadline because it's, you know, anybody who's prepared their taxes, you really do need the federal return done in order to do the state return. So that was done, but that, you know, we can't print money like the federal government can, and we can't borrow or you know, in the same way. But we do have to pay our bills, and that's money that's not coming into the state. So we are passing an emergency measure tomorrow to make sure that in the short term the bills are paid and we are covered without that revenue. So that was, you know, that will be our first measure that we will take up in virtual formal session, and it's historical. Other states are finding a way to do this. We have, you know, everybody from IT to, you know, our leaders, you know, in government trying to work this out. But it's new territory for us. I'll check in with you after tomorrow to let you know how it went. But it's all, you know, we're all adapting to this crazy new normal. And, you know, this voting virtually will probably be a short-term measure, but we do need to make sure that we are safe and our staff is safe. And we don't want to ourselves become, you know, somebody who's spreading this virus. The tough thing is with this virus is people who are asymptomatic can spread it. And so you can't even take everybody's temperature and be assured that nobody's spreading it. So it's challenging. And I'm happy to say that for the most part, you know, people are taking this seriously and people are doing a good job. It took a while for people to adjust, I think, but people are taking it seriously, and I'm really, really glad, and hopefully we are now, as a state, it appears we're at a peak, but we are leveling off on, it's really a plateau right now, and now we're just waiting for the numbers to go down, but we're plateauing at a horrible place. We don't want to stay here too long, but we are at that plateau, so once we start coming down, I think the federal criteria is 14 days. I think once we decline for 14 days, I think that's when we'll be able to look at returning to normal. Other states are not even waiting to see that decline, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But this is, you know, until we get to a place really where there's a vaccine for this. And there are some really interesting developments in that area, but it's really until we, you know, either have herd immunity, which means that a lot of people are going to die, or a vaccine, we are stuck in this this protective, self-protective, protective of others' new normal, where we can't gather in groups, and it's not just to keep ourselves safe, but everybody in our households. So I went far beyond what you asked me, but I find that at this time it all comes back to the virus. It really does.
It does, and you know, you've every time I do these interviews, I tell you, I always learn something new. It seems like. And, you know, I've been thinking about this. I'll let you go here in a second, but you talk about, I've seen all the stories. We'll take their temperatures when they walk into the office building or whatever when we return. But you're right. I mean, if you're asymptomatic, you have the virus, but you're not going to have a temperature. You're right. And it's funny. I kind of thought about that, but until you said it, it didn't really get hammered into my brain, so to speak. But there's always something here, and I'm glad we have people thinking about this. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also for people, there's some horrible stories, mostly out of the Midwest, where people work in meatpacking plants, and they are working, you know, not in great conditions anyhow, but right next to each other. And we've seen terrible outbreaks and lots of people dying out there. And, you know, these workers need protection. They can't, you know, that there's constant noise, and they have to be near each other. So companies, they're trying to adjust. But there's a whole liability issue and a whole worker protection issue that, you know, unfortunately the federal government is siding with the ownership of the companies. But the workers are really in, a spot that really isn't safe. So workplaces are going to have to adapt, and there's going to have to be, you know, a lot of people who, when they interviewed for their jobs, they said, well, can this job be done remotely? And the boss said, oh, no. And now they're finding out, well, yeah, this job can be done remotely. So I think a lot of employers are going to have to ask, is it really worth bringing people back into the office, or is it going okay remotely? There will be jobs that will be able to function remotely, at least for a while. And then other jobs just can't. They're in-person jobs, they're labor-intensive or whatever. So the work environment is going to have to do everything they can to keep people safe. I mean, masks will be required, distance between employees hopefully will be greater, and the workplace is going to have to adapt in the short term, perhaps in the long term. Life as we knew it just a few months ago, it's going to take a little while to get back there. We will get back there. But everything, you know, the model of work has changed. And even, you know, education, the way education has been delivered for as long as we've known is now suddenly disrupted. So we'll see, you know, if it goes back to being the way it was, or if there's some dimension of, you know, online learning. And this is all from, you know, elementary school all the way up through higher education and advanced degrees. I mean, everybody is wondering what this looks like a few years from now. So this virus is the ultimate disruptor. And we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how we adapt. But right now, all resources are focused on just keeping people alive, and praising healthcare workers who are not, you know, used to being the heroes of a battle, but they are all on the front line of this thing, putting their lives on the line, just like, you know, military often do. And they should be respected and treated as heroes as ever. And I'm heartened to see that people are stepping up to just say thank you. But they are heroes, and we owe them a lot after this. They're gonna, you know, they've suffered a lot of illness and death and risk, and we will, you know, we will owe them a lot once we get out of this.
Yeah,
it hit us all hard and by surprise. Who thought this would be the battle that we'd be facing at this time? But we'll come out of it. We're strong. We're a resourceful nation, and this is a great state that really cares about people. So I know we'll come out of it. But a lot of the dust still has yet to settle.
All right. Well, Representative Ehrlich, thanks so much for your time and insights, and we look forward again to talking with you again soon. But again, thanks for everything, and stay safe.
Oh, you too, Bill. I have to say the press is on the front line of this as well, and thank you for reaching out and getting the stories. And that's another topic we've discussed before, but and we'll have further discussions down the road. But you stay safe, and everybody listening. Just please listen to public health officials, and if you need to social distance, if they say to stay away from people, do it. Wear a mask. and take it all very seriously. It might just save your life and that of your loved ones. So that's my message. But everybody be well. We will get through this. I have no doubt. And thanks, Bill.
Yep, you're welcome. Thank you. State Representative Lori Ehrlich with us here on Connections. And coming up, we will be hearing from Karen Carroll, the Gloucester Public Health Director, and Jeff Hall from Red Cross Massachusetts, all ahead here on our Connection Show on this Thursday. MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.
All right, we're back now with our weekly update, thank goodness, with Karen Carroll of the Gloucester Public Health Department. She's the Gloucester Public Health Department's director. Karen, welcome back, and how are you doing?
Thanks, Rick. I'm good today. How are you?
Well, I am too, because the sun is out for the first time in a
while.
Yeah. And that has to pick up people's spirits. Well, Karen, yes. I guess since last we talked, and I know the numbers are only updated, I think, like once a week in the paper, and they go through Tuesday, I believe. And it doesn't look like the curve has gone up exponentially, at least in Gloucester. And around Cape Ann, thank goodness the numbers are looking good. But obviously not good enough statewide to open anything up, as the governor extended the closures through May 18. And I wonder what the comment is now out of the Gloucester Public Health Department with respect to that.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Rick. I think we were all, hopeful that May 4th date could be a date in which we could start moving into that new phase. But as you said, the numbers are still rising throughout the state of Massachusetts, and even on Cape Ann, we're still seeing additional cases every day. We're not seeing that massive spike that's overwhelming the healthcare system, but we are continuing to see a rise. So what we really need to see is that number of days in a decline of new cases statewide. So we need to string together almost 2 weeks of the numbers coming down each day, a little bit, fewer new cases each day being reported. Now, you also have to balance that with additional testing coming through, those kinds of things. So the state's watching a lot of indicators, and as I said last week, they have a great information on their website, looking at the number of hospitalizations, the number of deaths, the number of tests that are being administered, and then the number that are coming back positive. So all of those together create a picture of whether our curve is going up, down, or flattening, or where we're at. And unfortunately, we're not quite through this yet statewide. We are still, kind of in the thick of this. So we'll sit tight. I think, the governor unfortunately did the May 18th what he needed to do. He doesn't have any control over this disease like any of us do. So it is what it is, and we've come this far. So there's no doubt in my mind people will dig deep and stay put and really take all these precautions for a couple more weeks. During that time, I know he's set up a task force, and we're setting up a local one as well called our Reopening Task Force. It gives us time to really start planning that should the numbers keep going down by May 18th and we're able to move into the next phase of this, that we don't waste any time when we get to that point planning, that we put a lot of things in place, that we have some clear agreement on a statewide level about what opens first and how we open. And we're going to have our own task force locally as well to really look at what our issues might be that are unique to Gloucester, to Cape Ann,
And spending time learning from people in other countries, other cities, other states about what worked and what didn't work in opening up phases. So, you know, it's an opportunity, and that's kind of where we're at right now. And we'll keep chugging forward and hope that May 18th, but I think we just have to wait and see. There's no crystal ball here, unfortunately.
Right. Patience is the key. Karen, yep. One thing I want to ask you, and I didn't mention this in our pregame warm-up, but in this age of instant gratification, instantaneous communication, I want answers now. People, I think, need to be reminded that a scientific study of this kind, of this magnitude, is going to take some time. And to get the final results, to get some kind of conclusions or sometimes some kind of permanent recommendations, that's going to take quite a while. This isn't something that's going to go away like, you know, before fall or something in terms of getting an overall picture.
Exactly. Right. We'll reopen in stages, and I think you've heard people, officials at every level talking about that. It won't be a light switch going on. It will be a slowly moving things back into an open and exposing people. So we're minimizing risk and not eliminating it. And as we go and as we don't see a spike or any new, you know, outbreaks, then we can feel confident we can go a little further. And just so you know, a lot of the plans that we're working from and the federal government's working from are in these three phases of approximately 28 days. And I think, you know, once we get to the point where we can move into phase one, then that helps people. There is a little bit of a, you know, there's a little comfort you can take in that roughly a month in a phase. And then if all goes well, you move into the next phase. So there are some knowns in the planning. So there's some things that you can kind of think about. But again, yeah, it all just depends on how the cases go, how the numbers go, and how the disease spreads or doesn't spread in the next couple of weeks.
Well, a positive sign for those residents in Gloucester, the mayor and the public health department, under your direction, have reopened the public boat landings and boat ramps in the city. And what's the impact of that?
Yeah, so that's a great example of, you know, just one of the many issues that comes up all the time, and especially in a coastal community where the weather started to get warm, and we realized we didn't really know how this was going to play out, and was it going to create a lot of traffic to our community? Were people going to be able to safely social distance? So we took a pause, and I know that was hard for some people, but I think it was a good move. We had a chance to have some really good discussions and figure out how to do it safely, how to restrict access a little bit so that we don't have mobs and mobs of people in any one place. That's the name of the game, obviously. The more we keep apart from one another, the more we stay in, the more we prevent this virus from moving through the community. So, you know, I think some of the reluctance on our part was we just wanted to make sure that people understood that we're not saying you can't go outside and onto the water, but what we are reiterating is that we are still in this thing. We are still in the critical time period. We are still under a state of advisory, a stay-home state of advisory from the governor's office. So, you know, really it's that balance of being outside, riding your bike, to going out on your boat, but being careful and really ultimately trying not to go out and about doing things as much as possible, especially when there's cars and boats and people involved. So again, it's balancing. We wanted to make it sure that people were really clear that we're still in this advisory, and we all should be limiting any trips, even for essential services. We should be limiting the number of times we go to the grocery store. We should be limiting the number of times we're out and about, because we're humans and we're accident prone. And every time we head out, we're going to touch things, see people, have accidents, breakdowns, whatever. And these are all of the reasons that when, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, when you talk about stay-at-home orders, stay-at-home advisories, that's the point of it. So, again, it's about moderation. It's about people using good judgment, acting responsibly. We understand that this is important for people's mental health, to be able to go out and enjoy nature, as long as they can do it from safe distances and not increase the spread of the disease, especially right now. We're still in the thick of it. So, yeah, I think we had some good conversation, and hopefully we've been able to get that message out to folks, to, you know, to really think about that balance of going out, what's essential, what's non-essential, and being really safe if you do go out.
And the emphasis about that is absolutely essential to wear face coverings.
Yep, absolutely. So face coverings are, you know, they're not the same as a medical mask, but they are recommended now by CDC and by the city health department. They'll slow down some transmission, so especially if someone is coughing or sneezing. But, you know, we know that they can still spread from person to person. These face cloths, they won't block air particles, but they will block moisture particles. So they'll do some line of defense for you and for those you come in contact with, and they are required anytime you go into an essential business. And I can also add, you know, they're just a good idea if you're going to be outside, if you're going to go and walk in an area where you might be passing your neighbors walking their dogs, or where you might not be able to maintain that 6-foot distance from another person, which frankly is most of our sidewalks in communities. It's probably a good idea to have that face covering on. It's not required. I mean, the recommendation is really mainly about when you're indoors, approaching essential workers, food supply, grocery workers, and you have to be there and they have to be there. It's just one more barrier to try to protect people. And that's where it is really essential that people wear their face coverings. Again, if you're outside, use your judgment. If you can stay safely away from others that might infect you or you might infect them, fine, you don't need it. If you are in an area that there's other people and you may be not able to social distance, put your mask on. I have one in my pocket and one in my purse, and you know, kind of use them most of the time when I'm out and about. And we do recommend that. We also recommend that things like thicker fabrics like toweling or denim are better than thin cotton. Thin cotton doesn't block as much people.
All right. Great advice.
Another little aside, yeah.
Great advice and very reassuring. That is Karen Carroll, who is the public health director in the city of Gloucester.
Thanks, Rick. And just ahead, Jeff Hall from Red Cross, Massachusetts, will be joining us on the line. Some interesting news he'll have for us just ahead on Connections.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com. Jeff Hall, the Communications Marketing Manager for the American Red Cross in Massachusetts, is joining us. And, Jeff, welcome. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Tell us how COVID-19, the coronavirus, is impacting services by the Red Cross. That's a big, broad question, and we'll kind of break it up a little bit. But what's the kind of the fast overview, 60,000-foot above look?
Yeah, most of the residents of Massachusetts can expect if they are in need of Red Cross services, they're still going to be able to get them. They may be in a little bit different way simply because we're trying to abide by Governor Baker's social distancing policies. But they're going to see the same services they would normally see. Probably one of the most things people have seen on the news lately is our ask for blood donations. Those are continuing. We have seen a significant downturn in the number of mobile drives we have out in the community. That's simply because most of the places that we host these mobile drives don't have the space available to meet the standards set out for this public health emergency. But people can still donate at our fixed locations. We have one in Danvers. Chances are the appointments are going to stretch out probably into late May and June simply because they are completely booked up near term. So if people have the desire to give blood, and we certainly hope they do, just be patient and schedule your appointments. Even if it's 2 months into the future, the need for blood is going to continue.
So at this point, then, you're handling it. In other words, here's my question, if I can get it out here, is that you're not short donations right now because people are making those appointments and coming in as fast as you can handle them.
Yeah, right now our blood inventory is stable, and that's a great thing. That's mainly because of elective procedures at hospitals aren't occurring. So the need for blood coming in from hospitals is not what it would be outside of the pandemic. And, you know, as things return to normal, we'll get our mobile blood drives working again, and people will see a return to what was normal with blood drives in their local communities. But, you know, so we just ask folks to be patient and continue to you know, roll up their sleeves and give blood. It's really one of the easiest way to help your community out and those in need.
You bring up an interesting point about the, it's related to the healthcare services. In other words, hospitals are able to deal with the crush of COVID-19 patients because they don't have the elective surgery going on. And that would be the same, as you're pointing out, for the blood supply as well. So in that regard, it hasn't depleted blood supplies, as you just pointed out.
Yeah, it's been, you know, we're trying to find the good in every situation. So we're still providing that emergent blood that hospitals and cancer centers need. They need different types of blood products from us. So we're still able to supply those thanks to the generosity of the donors that are going out. And we've implemented a lot of changes at our sites with mask-wearing policies. And we just want to remind people that if you do want to come out, it is safe, and we're following safety procedures laid out by the CDC and the state of Massachusetts.
Maybe you could share a little more information backing up a couple of months to what are the services that the Red Cross does perform on the North Shore. Give us the scope of those services.
Yeah, certainly blood is something that's very visual to people. That's what most people think of when they think of the Red Cross. The other is disaster services. Where we respond to major disasters across the country, but disasters in local communities tend to be home fires. We respond to about 6 or 7 home fires every single day across Massachusetts. So that's one of our most visible and most needed services across Massachusetts. Our team of volunteers work with local fire departments to respond to these home fires. Right now, we're working virtually, and we're notified by fire departments that there is a fire. We get contact information from the families affected, and we reach out to them, set up client services, talk to them about what their needs are, get them some financial assistance so that they have a place to stay, either a hotel or with family or friends, and then give them a plan and work with them to figure out what the next few days, weeks, and months are going to look like for them as they try to resettle if they're not able to move back into their home that they were in. So that's one of the most visible services we provide to the communities. We also provide services to veterans, military members and their families, as well as we do our training services where we're teaching CPR and first aid. Those are still going on as well. Those have changed as well, how we interact in our class size numbers, but we're still continuing to do that safely.
Jeff, it's a good reminder to hear you talk about the relief and the emergency kind of coverage the Red Cross does at fires. It reminds us that, you know, the need of the Red Cross is not just the blood, but also the donations to staff up those kinds of responses. And so, you know, those things do continue. Is winter the biggest time for those things? It always seems like winter is for fires. I may be wrong on that, but it just seems like such tragic time, winter time for fires.
Yeah, late fall and all through winter are definitely a busy time for home fires, simply because people, whether they're using them safely, but space heaters can be a real danger in a home, simply because if they're up against a wall or near a curtain, certainly we still see people using their ovens and stoves to heat their homes occasionally. And of course, that if you have natural gas supply in your home, that's very dangerous. So winter is a tough time, simply because of different utilities being used in the home. We see a lot of electrical fires in the wintertime. And those are some of the hardest times to recover as well, because it's cold outside. And we work with a lot of local partners to get people resettled into apartments or homes as quickly as possible.
If people wanted to make a donation, what's the best way for them to do it, or the easiest way?
I guess the easiest way is you can go to redcross.org online to make a donation. You can also text 90999 and donate $10 that way. We're a nonprofit, and we function solely on the donations of people of the United States. So we definitely need your donations to do our work. We're also a volunteer-led organization. 95% of our workforce are volunteers. They go out and give us their time to go out and do these important missions in the communities.
Very good. We'll put a link up on our website and on this post to the Red Cross site. Finally, here's a question. This is an unrehearsed question, Jeff, but I'm hearing all about these tests for antibodies, maybe a blood test or something like that. Is that something that the Red Cross would ever be involved in, or is that more likely to be done in labs or more of a lab situation or a hospital kind of situation?
We haven't been asked to test for antibodies at this time. Right now, what we're doing in the COVID environment is if a person tested positive for the COVID-19 virus medically, and they were medically confirmed to have that, once they are 4 weeks past the all clear from their physician, we're allowing them to donate convalescent plasma to us. And the hospitals use that plasma with the most severely ill patients they have, and to try to help them recover quicker. So we do have a program we're running with the FDA right now to capture plasma from folks that have recovered from the COVID-19 virus.
Interesting. Jeff, I'm done with my questions, but a lot of great information. Anything else that maybe I did not ask you about that you want to share with us?
No, we just want people to know that we're still out and moving around in the communities. We're probably a little less visual than we have been in the past, simply because of we're trying to stay at home ourselves, and we're trying to stop the spread of this virus. But if Red Cross help is needed, you can certainly give us a call or check us out online, and we'll be there to help.
Jeff, thanks so much for your time, and stay safe.
You as well. Thank you very much for the time.
Yep. Jeff Hall, the Communications Marketing Manager, American Red Cross of Massachusetts, with us here on Connections.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and Patio Doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
That is our show for today. A special thanks to all of our guests for joining us here on Connections. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we hope to be talking with State Senator Diane DeSaglio, also Lisa Dana, the superintendent of schools from Danvers. Also on our post, I think, or actually tomorrow, we'll probably be posting an interview up there with Nate Bryant, who is the vice president at Salem State U. Goes right into the president's office at Salem State, but he's going to be the interim president at North Shore Community College. Nate Bryan will have a feature on him up tomorrow as well on the website. And Sue, Rick, who else do we have? I think I tipped.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing that thing from Nate Bryan. Yeah, that's Sue Wheeler. Yeah, Sue. Sue owns a boutique and an art gallery in Magnolia called Arts Abound. It's very unique. It's very different. It's open for curbside pickup only at the moment, but the website reveals many, many things as to what she does. And she also is making these designer masks, if you will, for first responders that she's donating, but you can also purchase them. So please listen in. Sue Wheeler, Arts Abound in Magnolia.
I don't think I'm going to go out until I get a designer mask. That's it. That's the final word.
Gotta have one.
That's Connections with Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. Have a great Thursday.